Welcome back to TV's Top 5, the Hollywood Reporter's TV podcast. I'm Leslie Goldberg, West Coast TV editor, and I'm joined by my friend, co-host, and THR's chief TV critic, Dan Feinberg. Dan, how you holding up, my friend?
Oh, near a semi-holiday, so doing fine. Yourself?
Same. It's getting scary here in LA again, but, you know, it's everywhere. Anyway, enough about that. But as we record this, we are about to sign off for the Thanksgiving holiday weekend. And, you know, this week, rather than taking the episode off as we have done in the past, we're going to break format and do a little kind of fun holiday bonus episode. So consider this more like TV's top 2.5.
I'm Angus T. Jones.
So this week's interview features an interview with longtime Hallmark Channel VP programming Michelle Vickery. As our loyal listeners may recall, last year around this time, we had a newsworthy interview with then Hallmark CEO Bill Abbott, in which he proceeded to, well, he effectively lit his own Christmas tree on fire. Dan, you're going to read a little snippet here from this interview.
Indeed. Among other things, he discussed the fact that they had a couple semi-Hanukkah-related movies that didn't actually use the word Hanukkah in the titles. He said, "I think Christmas has become almost a secular type of holiday more than Hanukkah, which really does have more of a religious feel." He called the titles subjective and said, "I think Hanukkah, from a religious point of view, is not necessarily as commercial and not necessarily as much about gift-giving. And it's really about what those 8 nights signify from the religious point of view. So I'm not ruling it out as something we would do, but this is kind of our first foray into this type of double holiday mix with a lot of Hanukkah in both movies and a lot of celebration of how those nights are celebrated and experienced by those who practice the religion."
Yeah, it was a mess. You know, Abbott effectively made excuses about the lack of actual Hanukkah movies. You know, so he had two, Hallmark had two last year, and it was basically Jewish characters plopped into a Christmas movie without Hanukkah in the title. And then beyond that, you know, he also made a lot of excuses about the network's lack of diversity and LGBTQ representation in the interview, which you could, by the way, hear in its entirety back in episode 48 from last November. And then after our interview, this is like 2 or 3 weeks after the interview, color us not surprised, but Hallmark really found itself at the center of a national firestorm last December after pulling 4 commercials featuring same-sex couples, citing the quote-unquote debate surrounding them from conservative groups as a distraction. The network would reverse course shortly thereafter, and Abbott, as you can guess, was fired in January after 11 years with Hallmark.
But before we get to our interview with Abbott's longtime number 2, let's take a quick run-through of some of the pre-holiday headlines this week.
Breaking news came in. Obviously, it's probably the biggest news dump that could come before Thanksgiving, and I'm going to knock on wood because it's about noon, so there's still time for plenty more there. But One Day at a Time has been canceled again. ViacomCBS, whose niche cable network Pop aired the truncated 4th season, will not be bringing the beloved comedy back for a 5th. It's another blow, man. We've talked extensively about this show and how it really just represents the struggles of existing in the peak TV landscape, Dan.
And it remains a show that is in many ways a special show and a show that means a tremendous amount to a lot of people. And my understanding from you and other people is that Sony Television is still attempting to shop this elsewhere, though it's hard to know exactly what the most obvious home for it is. But yeah, it's a very good show that has had a very rough go of it. And there's the one perspective that says, man, we could have just had one season of this total and look what we got. So that's a plus. And then there's the other part of it that is this is a show that, you know, deserves an audience and that a lot of people would really enjoy if they ever discovered it. And so who knows, maybe the 3rd or 4th home will be the charm.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically Sony is continuing to shop the series. It would be probably, I think, a record-setting 3rd network for this scripted show. I did report yesterday when the story broke that CBS All Access, the streamer at ViacomCBS, did attempt to make a deal for season 5 on that platform. But there is a clause in the remaining deal with Netflix that said the show can't air as an original on a rival streaming service until 2022. So what does that mean? It means CBS and Viacom would have had to spend a ton of money to remarket the show. And I mean, we saw what the returns were for episodes of season four on the CBS linear network, which is they have had success with multicams in the past, like Big Bang Theory, and it just didn't cut through for whatever reason.
In other news, Ken Jennings will be the first interim host of Jeopardy as the quiz show resumes filming following the passing of Alex Trebek. And speaking of quiz shows, Peyton Manning will host a reboot of College Bowl for NBC.
Over at Netflix, a streamer removed episodes of Dave Chappelle's show after the comedian, who has a deal there, asked the company to pull them, considering that Viacom, who owns the show, actually never paid the comedian for streaming rights. So classy move on Netflix's part, bad move on Viacom's part.
Definitely bad move on Viacom's part. The question of who else does or doesn't have money that comes to them via streaming, who may or may not be missing out on some residuals out of this, who isn't Dave Chappelle, is a question. I mean, it's one thing for him to say, pay me more money. But if other people were getting money for this, it's a little strange. But
well, I mean,
anyway,
it's not just pay me more money. It's pay me the money that he never got. That's crazy.
It is very strange. Also, though, Chappelle's show is available in several streaming places, including, I believe, HBO Max at the moment. So you can watch it if you want to.
But that's a lot of streaming deals that they've made that he hasn't gotten a penny from. So
HBO has handed out a series order to the highly anticipated adaptation of the very, very, very popular video game The Last of Us.
And speaking of HBO, WarnerMedia continues to look for creative ways to bolster HBO Max and announced this week that all episodes of HBO's rookie finance drama Industry will be available on the streamer starting November 27th. It's a really fascinating move, especially when you kind of take it in context of releasing The Flight Attendant, the HBO Max original starring Kaley Cuoco. They released that early online for free. Hey, here's this big buzzy show with a big superstar in it. Come check out, you know, this, you know, subscribe to our platform, watch the rest of it. I mean, the pilot is very, you know, it kind of hooks you right away. But yeah, there's a lot of efforts to really bolster that service and bring in people from all different areas of what really represents of really what the streaming service has to offer. Right. Titans, the DC Universe show that probably not many fanboys have watched, is going to get a linear sneak on TNT as part of a big DC weekend that they're doing over there. Guess what? HBO Max is a big hub for all things DC, from the TV shows to the feature films. So it's a great way to kind of promote the service while kind of eventizing stuff on a linear network. So really smart moves.
You can hear much more about what's happening at HBO Max and the acquisition of Wonder Woman for streaming at Christmas in last week's episode of the podcast.
And you can hear more from the industry showrunners during our November 6th interview from episode 94.
Indeed. In other news, The Expanse will return for its fifth season next month, and it has scored an early renewal for a sixth and final season at Amazon.
And wrapping up headlines this week, Dee Harris Lawrence, the showrunner of All Rise and David Makes Man, has signed an overall deal with producers Warner Brothers Television. And fun fact, I was at a panel at the ATX Festival, the very, very great ATX Festival, which we cannot wait to go back to Austin and hear more and kind of revert back to that way of life. But I was at a panel listening to Dee, and I was just sitting here thinking, why aren't we doing more with showrunners? And her comments really inspired our showrunner spotlight segment. And you can go back and listen to our interview with her from episode 36 from last year. Well, with all that out of the way, it's now time for our holiday spotlight interview.
With Thanksgiving now in the books, we're officially into the holiday season, apparently. Christmas is a month away and Hanukkah is much closer, but to get us in the spirit, we're pleased to be welcomed by Michelle Vickery, the Executive Vice President of Programming at Hallmark Channel parent company Crown Media. Michelle, thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure. I'm really excited to talk to you guys today.
So, you know, getting started, Hallmark traditionally launches holiday programming 100 days before Christmas, which you did this year on October 23rd.
We did.
In your nearly two decades overseeing original programming for mm-hmm. Hallmark, how have you seen the appetite for programming change this year specifically?
This year? Well, you know, it's been an evolution, I will say. We, you know, many years ago would make Christmas movies and we had great, you know, had success with them, but we, you know, sort of recognized that our brand is about celebrations and it's about holidays and it's about celebrating community and romance and making people feel good. And so we decided that we would sort of make it into an event. And we thought that because of our brand, we really had not only the permission, but the obligation to really make it a big event. And I would say that this year, what we've seen, in my opinion, is that we have become part of a pop culture phenomenon, because it isn't just about coming to Hallmark, turning on the television on October 23rd, 100 days before Christmas starts, and going all the way to January 1st, but they stay tuned the entire time. And they are buying their Hallmark Channel socks and their Hallmark Channel wine and their Hallmark Channel wine glasses and their blankets and their chocolate. And they're listening to the Sirius Hallmark Channel radio station, and they can't get enough of what we have to provide. And I think for this year, in particular, it is about the positivity and the optimism and the feel good and the, I just want to relax with Hallmark. I want to feel better after having spent 2 hours with you. And that's a promise that we make and that our brand helps us make. And you know, I will tell you, we are even greater offenders than the 100 days. Back in March, when this first started happening, we had an overwhelming outpouring of, hey, we need a little Christmas right now. So we ran 2 weekends of Christmas movies to great success in the ratings, and our audience loved it. And then we did it again in Christmas in July. Evidently, people need a little Hallmark Christmas this year.
I won't lie. As we record this, it's November 19th, and I started wrapping holiday gifts last night.
I love it.
As you mentioned, obviously people are definitely looking for, I don't know, more soul nourishment, or however anyone wants to put it, this year than perhaps ever before. Talk a bit about how the coronavirus, COVID-19, the whole thing has impacted basically every step of the process this year, from the actual creative pipeline to the production, everything.
Yeah, well, I mean, as you guys remember, we all remember, the world remembers, when this first started, we were saying things like, oh, it's going to be 2 weeks, which of course was not the case. And as it kept, you know, mid-March, we have original movies that were set to premiere in the spring, original movies that were set to premiere in the summer. And the longer we were, you know, sheltering at home, the more it became clear we weren't going to be able to do those. So what we did in that 3.5 to almost 4 months is we took a look at what we needed to focus on, and that was our leadership position in holiday. So it was all hands on deck for 40 holiday movies. And when we came back up in mid-July, I believe, and started in production, I had bosses who said, okay, realistically, how many do you think you're going to be able to complete of the 40? And I had to say, I have absolutely no idea. Let me give you a percentage, but it's not real. I don't know. And I'm so proud of the team. They got to 39. We didn't quite make it to the 40. We're going to air 40. And we did an acquisition of one, but they got it to 39. We're still making them. We're still finishing them. Thankfully, they're all shot. So that's a great thing. We're all in post-production. But a phenomenal achievement. So I get to say 99%, somewhere close. Yeah.
Could you give us a sense of what the production timetable is on a traditional Hallmark movie? How long do they have to shoot? How long do they get to edit, et cetera?
Yeah. So traditionally, all things, you know, the regular problems that happen in production, a movie can be, you know, a script can go from anywhere from 6 months to a couple of years to develop. Once we get to that place where we say, okay, it's ready for green light, it's all systems go, because that's when funding and casting and all of that can, you know, start to happen. About 4 weeks of prep and location scouting and hiring a crew and casting. And then we shoot, we have 15-day shoots. So over 3 weeks, that's how long any movie, our traditional movies, take to shoot. It used to be 21 days back in the 90s, but now we've honed it into 15 days. And it's funny, if we've worked with somebody who we haven't worked with in a while, that hasn't done a TV movie in a while, they'll say things like, 15 days, it's impossible. And it really is. And art and TV movie producers, directors, and crew are a special breed, and being able to accomplish what they do. And then when things are good, we like to take 6 to 8 weeks in post-production. And then when things are really good, we get it finished in time so we can send you guys finished copies of a movie so you can review them. But of course, this year has made it very difficult for us. I mean, we are taking delivery of movies days before air, but we're getting it done.
But in terms of how, you know, the creative and what you're seeing and what viewers are seeing on screen, how would you say this year's crop of holiday movies changed, given that they had to be filmed not just during a 15-day shoot, which is traditional, but during COVID and with safety protocols? Did, for example, did the types of scenes that we're seeing change? Do you have holiday movies that have families struggling because not everyone can be there because of COVID?
Yeah, it's been, from a creative standpoint, I think that our team and the crews, particularly even the most recent ones, and there's been lots of COVID protocols that have changed and gotten stricter and then loosened up and then changed again. I would say, you know, the Hallmark kiss is one that we have to take a lot of care with and make sure our actors are comfortable. We have, you know, we've followed the highest safety protocols possible. And I think that because we had that 3.5 months where we were just developing scripts, from a story point and from a creative standpoint on the script side, I feel like these guys were able to develop some of our strongest scripts we've ever had written. And I think you see the result of that in the storytelling. You know, there's fewer crowd scenes, there's fewer people at the Christmas tree lighting, you can see that, you know, in some ways, you know, creatively and in locations, that people are a little bit further apart. And so we just, you know, they got really smart about how to make it look like a regular Hallmark Christmas, not a COVID Christmas.
You mentioned the Hallmark kiss.
And yeah.
I feel like we've seen how a lot of people are handling such things. I've seen pictures of people kissing through plexiglass. I've seen people kissing mannequins. I've seen people kissing their spouses in real life from other angles. What did you guys do? What workarounds?
Yeah, we've done all of that. And we have had, you know, we've had a couple movies where they didn't kiss. We just know that they have, you know, found their love partner, and they are, you know, and it's a happy Hallmark ending. But, you know, her head leans on his shoulder and away goes the Christmas carousel. So there's a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
The Hallmark high five. At
the Hallmark
end of the
high five. That's exactly it. I haven't done that, but I'm going to make a note right now.
Yeah. Dan will get co-EP credit on that.
Exactly,
one.
Exactly. Story by Dan.
You know, I do want to change gears a little bit here. You know, last year was kind of a fraught holiday season for Hallmark. Then CEO Bill Abbott was fired in January after he removed a commercial featuring a same-sex couple before eventually backtracking and issuing apology. That, of course, followed an interview that he did with us on our show last November. That would be episode 47 for those interested in going back, where he kind of defended having only 4 holiday movies with black leads, no same-sex characters, and only 2 Hanukkah movies, neither of which actually had the word Hanukkah in their title. With such a crazy year, what lessons did you and your Hallmark programming team learn from all that controversy?
I can tell you what we did. We hit the ground running, and we focused on expanding our storytelling. We focused on diversity and inclusion. And as soon as we knew how long we were going to be down in production, we were really able to strategize about how to make sure that more people and as many people could see themselves in a Hallmark Christmas movie and relate to those characters. And so We started working on stories that I think we're really proud of this year. I can share one in particular that I'm really proud of, The Christmas House. And it's a multi-generational, multi-dimensional movie about one family with three stories. It's an ensemble cast. And I love the inspiration for it. I'll just start with it. Robert Buckley, who's one of the stars, he was one of those families that had the crazy Christmas house and that you would decorate and all of the, you know, the school kids would come to see. Inspired by that, he brought this story to us. His parents, played by Sharon Lawrence and Treat Williams, are at a crossroads in their relationship. And so really proud of the fact that we are able to not just tell that A story and just have it be two certain kinds of leads, but they bring their two sons home. One is Robert Buckley, who's at a crossroads, and the other's played by Jonathan Bennett, who brings his husband home. And they're in the process of adopting a baby so that they can start to make their holidays traditions. And we're really proud that we were able to make those changes and move in a direction where there are so many of the movies this year that have diversity, so many of the movies that have inclusion. This one we're particularly proud of. We shared an early screener with GLAAD, and they loved and endorsed the movie, which we're also thrilled to hear about. I will mention our Hanukkah movie this year, Love Lights Hanukkah, which does have it in the title. That stars Mia Kirshner and Ben Savage. And this is a Hanukkah movie. And it is. It does start with an adopted woman who has lost her adoptive parents, and they did celebrate Christmas. She decides to do an at-home DNA test and finds out she's Jewish. And the movie is a journey for her to learn what that means for her, to understand her new family, her new faith, and what celebrating Hanukkah means, and what that new community can mean. So we're really proud of that one as well. And I will tell you, we were very nervous because, as you know, a lot has been dictated by physical production. And we thought we weren't going to be able to get that movie until December 20th, but we really, really hustled. And that 6 weeks of post-production out the window, I think they're going to deliver it to us in 3 weeks of post-production. And we're really proud that we'll be able to air it during Hanukkah.
I believe we call that a Hanukkah miracle.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll take that.
Well, okay. So talk to us from a creative standpoint, and I don't know if you're going to have exact numbers for this, but in a sort of nebulous sense of what percentage of these movies were written by people who are sort of within the Hallmark family, you know, your recurring stable of writers,
yeah.
How many came from new writers and how you found the writers from outside of the Hallmark family that you wanted to showcase?
Yeah, we, you know, I have to say, you know, we did have to use a lot of our stable of writers too, because it's, you know, in that usual world where we can go out and meet with agents and start to, you know, cull from, you know, more diverse pools and more writers. We were hitting the ground running. And by the way, a lot of those movies were already in development. But we have, you know, put out invitation to expand the pool. We have more writers, more women writers than we've ever had. We have more writers of diversity, and we have more gay writers writing for us. And we're particularly proud of that, and more to come in 2021.
You know, when you say that you have more writers of diversity, more gay writers, like, you know, in terms of how many did you have before? Does it feel like it's a big, big change from what you've seen for 17 over your 17 years there?
I would say, absolutely. I would say significant gains in the last couple of years, particularly this year. And I know that the focus from our development team is to increase that number substantially with both diversity and inclusion and making sure that that's an important part of the hiring process.
I think that we got a fair amount of feedback from people on Twitter. You know, some people after the interview with Bill Abbott were like, yay, way to, you know, feet to the fire, blah, blah, blah. But then, of course, there was the other side of it that was if Hallmark doesn't want to change, why can't Hallmark make the movies Hallmark wants to make? From your perspective, what is the imperative from your and of making sure that Hallmark movies are more representative than they have been in the past.
It's just, you know, I mean, it's one, the most obvious, it's the right thing to do. And our brand, and it is, you know, one of the oldest and most iconic brands in American history, over 100 years long, old, they have been dedicated to diversity and inclusion. And we are more aligned with them than ever before. And so we really hope that what we're striving to do is expand our audience and not just stay the same and stay who we are and program to a narrow audience. We want to have the most expansive audience. And I will say the ratings this year have reflected that. And we've had more diversity and more inclusion in our movies this year than ever before. People love them. People can compliment us for them, and people congratulate us for making these changes.
But the question that a lot of people are going to be asking there is, why did it take so long? Why was this not a realization that you came to 10 years ago, that diversity equaled ratings, equaled community, equaled expanded audience? What's the struggle of making something like that happen in a big ship like Hallmark?
Yeah, the only thing I can speak to is what I've been focused on this year and what I have charged the team with and charged our entire company to do, and that is to make that change now.
You know, I wonder though, you know, when you hear an interview like Bill Abbott gave us last year, and he basically said that, you know, we stay in this lane. This is the lane that we're in. We have no interest in doing these other things. And usually, you know, from covering TV development, when networks want to grow and expand and make a concerted push for diversity and inclusion, it starts at the top, meaning Bill Abbott. So he's gone now. But I also wonder how much of your efforts to grow and expand to better reflect society were kind of roadblocked by Bill Abbott.
Again, all I can speak to is what I was able to do starting in January and what I've been able to do this year. And I can tell you that I have a team that has been extremely motivated to make those changes and to see how substantial the changes have been this year. I'm really proud of, and I couldn't be more proud of the team because they hit the ground running and here we are today.
I do want to talk, you know, that you guys brought in or Hallmark brought in, or Crown Media, your parent company, brought in Wanya Lucas to take over for Bill Abbott. She joined in July. Mm-hmm. So that means from, you know, the first 6 months of the year, you've really had this time to create this year's holiday slate. But I also wonder, now that she's been there for a few months, what kind of stamp has she put on Hallmark this far, given that these 40 movies were probably picked up well before she joined the company?
Yeah, and that's right. It really was in that 3.5 months. And by the way, a lot of them were being worked on prior to the production lockdown, but that 3.5 months where we really solidified what the slate was going to look like for this entire year. But Wanya is inspirational. She is so exciting. She's exciting to work for, and she's excited to be here. And I think expanding our, not only our holiday table, but our programming table to be more diverse and inclusive is a big priority of hers, and continuing to look at ways that we can do it where we focus on even greater authenticity and casting for diversity as a great step, but also how do we create more authentic stories. And I'm really excited to work with her, as is the team.
Well, when you have a situation like a new voice coming in at the top of the pyramid, what sense do you get of what is and what isn't changeable within the brand? That you know, it's always just a question we have when you have a brand that has an established identity. Yeah. How much room is there from your perspective to actually legitimately seismically shift it?
Yeah, you know, those seismic shifts, I think we've all seen in the past, can be, that cliche revolution, not evolution, is often not the way to make shifts in television. And we have talked about, Wanya's talked about evolution. And I will tell you, you know, she is a huge brand fan. And the first thing she talks about is what's successful, what's working. Let's keep doing that. Let's do a little bit more of that. Let's stretch the edges of the brand. Let's continue to expand storytelling, but let's do it in let's evolve to it so that we are going a little bit deeper in a rom-com, a little bit funnier, a little bit more realistic in how we get our couples, you know, a conflict and then get them together. And even some of the storylines that we did this year, and again, yes, we did have this one, but the one that I'm particularly proud of, Holly and Ivy, where, and this is a new territory for us, and Wanya celebrated it, which is a story of a young woman who moves next to a single mom. She has two young children, and she finds out that her illness has returned, and this time it's terminal. And as she wonders what's going to happen to her children, our leading lady, played by Janelle Parrish, says, you know, I went up through the foster system and I'm not going to let that happen to your children, and I will take care of them for you. And that's, you know, expansive territory, I think, for us in storytelling. And I was, again, really proud of the team for finding that story and bringing it to the networks.
You know, wrapping up a little bit here, holiday movies and now holiday original series have become increasingly bigger business. You know, Lifetime, for example, was first to announce a holiday movie featuring a same-sex couple, doing that before Hallmark did. Now you've got Netflix, for example. They recently launched holiday rom-com Dash and Lily. They're making a slew of other holiday originals. Lifetime is in the business. You've got now a lot of these networks doing original holiday movies and specials. You know, how has the competition from other outlets impacted Hallmark? I mean, is the price that you're paying for these scripts going up? Is the cost of talent getting higher? And how do you guys feel internally that Lifetime beat you to the punch on a same-sex holiday movie?
You know, look, we're a business, so we are constantly looking at the competition. Here's what we've focused on. We know that our success and our leadership have caused other people to get in the game, and they may have firsts and they may have things that they do that we haven't done quite yet. And we have things that they haven't done quite yet, but what we have is our brand. And so we look at the competition, but what we really do is look at what we really do well. We work really, really hard to focus on maintaining our leadership status. And again, we try to create not just a group of movies, but a real environment. And again, that leads me back to, you know, our Hallmark enthusiasts wrapping their presents, sitting in their Hallmark blankets, wearing their Hallmark hoodies and their socks, and drinking tea and Hallmark wine and eating their Hallmark chocolates and enjoying what we do at the holidays.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and happy myriad holidays to you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. Happy holidays.
Thank you. Great to talk to you both.
For more information on Hallmark's holiday scheduling, as well as a ton of other holiday programming, go to THR.com and you can find one giant resource for more than 120 different titles. And wrapping things up as usual, it's a special holiday edition of the Critics Corner. Dan, we've got a couple big shows that have been released on streaming services that we kind of touched on before. But, you know, you've got The Flight Attendant on HBO Max, and Saved by the Bell is now up on Peacock. What are your recommendations for the big holiday weekend?
Indeed. Yes, we talked in last week's podcast about those last two shows. I think The Flight Attendant is a fun beach read of a TV show, and it has a very, very good star performance by Kaley Cuoco at its center. It's kind of stylish and fun and very, very, very disposable. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And I can see how that would absolutely strike a chord with people. Saved by the Bell, which has actually been getting a lot of very positive reviews, and I'm not sure I 100% agree. As I said last week, I think there is a great idea here. I think there is the possibility that with Tracy Wakefield at the helm, it could become the show it wants to be. To me, the idea is not currently matched by the execution, though I think that there are some very, very likable performances and, again, some good ideas and concepts here. I will keep watching it because I'm curious to see if it will come into being what it could be. Speaking of streamers that are coming out this weekend on Thanksgiving Day, CBS All Access premiered Texas 6, which is kind of a substitute for people who went to a high school where the Thanksgiving Day football game was the big deal, and maybe it's not happening this year, and that's all sad and stuff. It's the story of a high school in Texas that plays six-man football, which is a little bit like 11-man football, only with five men fewer on each side of the ball, in case you couldn't have figured that out. It's very, very much in the Last Chance U vein, only high school, but it's also a little bit Friday Night Lightsy. It's a lot of fun. Me personally, what I'm watching is I've been making it through another of those shows that is kind of a poster boy for our current streaming and peak TV era. That would be Wayne, which is airing on Amazon at this point. It originally aired on YouTube, possibly YouTube Red. I don't remember when it premiered in terms of the YouTube Red, YouTube Premium transition. Regardless, YouTube, you might or might not remember, had a little while where they were in the original programming game, and they had a lot of stuff. Some of it was actually kind of interesting. I mean, Cobra Kai was a bit of a breakout, but then they had Impulse, which was a pretty good coming-of-age pseudo-superhero show that was part of the Jumper franchise, though no one ever would have known that. And then they had Wayne, and these were shows that YouTube had absolutely no idea what to do with. And it's kind of embarrassing, the amount of money they put into original programming and to be completely unable to break these shows through. So it goes. Wayne moved to Amazon earlier this month, and suddenly people have been talking about it on Twitter. Weird how that happens. It is a sort of coming-of-age road trip show about a pair of teens from Brockton, Mass., who travel down the coast to Florida in search of a car, but really in search of themselves. It's very, very violent. It's peppered with obscenities and questionable Massachusetts accents, but it also has a really good vibe to it. And it's sort of like an American version of The End of the Bleeping World from Netflix, which is another show I love. I have a couple more episodes to go. And yeah, so sort of a funny show that has found a second life. And then a lot of people are going to be talking about on the pseudo movie front, because it's premiering on Hulu, Happiest Season, which is being boasted about as a sort of trailblazing lesbian holiday rom-com, you know, just sort of, it is a straight genre piece. It's just a genre piece that hasn't been appearing in motion picture theaters. So good. It has extremely likable performances by Kristen Stewart and Mackenzie Davis. And the cast itself is really remarkable. I have a lot of problems with it, but they're almost all exactly the sort of problems that I have with almost every single holiday rom-com, in that it's a genre that's not made for me.
Yeah. But I mean, just I watched it, Dan, and, you know, just a lesbian holiday rom-com that's a feature film that's got a great cast like this one. It's, you know, I didn't love it, but I love what it represents. I'll say that much.
Oh, what it represents is wonderful. And I think that is sort of the illustration of progress. If there are same sex holiday rom-coms that are every bit as problematic as something like, I don't know, apparently people think that The Family Stone is a classic. It's a really messed up movie, and a really messy, questionably good movie. But anyway, so Happiest Season is sort of in that vein. The cast is so wonderful. I mean, it's not just Mackenzie Davis and Kristen Stewart. It's Victor Garber. It's Mary Steenburgen. It's Aubrey Plaza. It's just an amazing cast of people who are having a lot of fun and who are just, there's a lot of joy to it. And so I found it extremely watchable, extremely pleasant. And the problems I have with it are no more or less than I have for a lot of entries in the genre. So I think that's probably better than a lot of the other sort of streaming movies that you could watch this weekend. I've read bad reviews for Black Beauty on Disney Plus. So, oh well, pity on that. My Disney Plus subscription will continue to be Mandalorian only. And then I've also heard not such great things about Melissa McCarthy's movie type thing that's also premiering on HBO Max. So whatever. Anyway, lots of options and lots of TV. And, you know, let your family members know that you love them, whether you're actually doing Thanksgiving with them or not, because you can still be together and connected without being there in person if it's a bad idea for health reasons.
Yeah. Well, for more of Dan's weekly recommendations, be sure to subscribe to THR's Now See This newsletter. But yes, Dan, stay safe. We're going to wrap things up this week, and we'll be back next week with our regular top five format. And in the meantime, everybody, happy Thanksgiving, happy holidays. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay smart.